You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
Seen any good movies lately, David?
I have.
Really? I would love to see a good movie.
I just reviewed Black Widow on Today's Nothing Personal. It was really good.
Let's start there, because I had a longstanding principle that I wasn't going to pay $30 for a movie that I could just get streaming.
I addressed it on the show.
And I cracked for Black Widow, because I have a decent home theater set up, and I was like, I'm just going to end up spending $100 at the movie theaters to see this movie. I don't really, really want to see it, but I don't want to miss out, so I rationalized spending. And it's a Disney Plus premiere, so you can share the admin credentials and other people in your family can watch. I rationalized spending the $29.99 on Black Widow, and Disney's on to something here. They're the first company to release the streaming numbers, the streaming box office numbers, and now every other studio might be feeling the heat because an impressive $60 million was made by Disney with the decision to put that on premier access on Disney Plus. First and foremost, though, David, what did you think about the film?
That's $10 million more than you got from DraftKings from one movie release. That's it. One quick, nothing little movie release. It's not even a ride at Disney World. And they got 60 mil. I was so happy to watch Mr. French in that movie. I don't know if you recognized him, but I talked about that on Today's Nothing Personal. The fact that Mr. French from The Departed was in the movie. And so was Florence Pugh from Little Women, who's now an action star. And then my favorite, Scarlett Johansson. I didn't realize what a sad backstory Black Widow had. That was really my takeaway, that I felt terribly for her, that they created this monster and she thought she had parents, but she didn't have parents. And they had James Bond's wife in. There was a Bond girl in the movie.
Rachel Weisz, who's married to Daniel Craig. With a character like James Bond, I guess you have to be more specific as to which Bond. And we'll move on quickly because I feel like I'm boxing Dan out a little bit. No.
I actually want to just be on the periphery here. But because I love David's business acumen, and Nothing Personal is a business and sports podcast, but I really think that David has a good facility with a lot of business acumen. When you look specifically at what's happening with television, the revolution of streaming, Disney Plus getting into the game, like Netflix got a huge head start, but Disney Plus... They're basically, during the pandemic, they evolved in a way that protects their entire company after they got crushed during the pandemic. So just tell me what you think is interesting about the future of television, streaming, and the entertainment and content business.
For every dollar that we give to the streaming services, that's a dollar we don't give to a movie theater company. So maybe, Mikey, you are going to short or long with GameStop. You could do that with AMC and some of the other movie chains. Because I, for one, am a huge movie theater guy, but not anymore. I'm not sure I will ever go back to a movie theater because I'm lucky enough to have a great home entertainment system. And even if I didn't, and even if I'm in a hotel, I'd rather watch a movie on a tablet than sit in a dirty seat eating popcorn that has been touched by myriad hands full of, if not COVID, then rat food. and I have an opportunity to have great sound. It's just different. Movie theaters mattered when you were on a 4-inch black and white TV and it wasn't available. Now that the price of TVs has gone down to where it has gone down to, I can explain to myself spending $30 to watch Black Widow so easily, it didn't even take a second to hit go on that movie because I want to be first. I want to not wait. I don't want to go to a theater, and it's a movie that interests me. Now, will I spend $30 on Jungle Book or Jungle Cruise with Rock, even though I love Emily Blunt? Love, 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 but not enough for $30 to watch The Rock go down the Nile.
Speaking of Emily Blunt, she's in A Quiet Place 2, and Paramount Plus is approaching theatrical releases a little bit different. They all are. HBO Max has decided we're going to swallow some of the lost revenue from just being exclusive to the movie theaters, especially with titles that are coming out in the fall, hopefully when we're getting even better with the vaccination, like The Matrix reboot. And they're just saying, if you subscribe to HBO Max, you'll get them for free with that HBO Max subscription for 30 days. And then you'll have to wait a little bit of a period before it comes back.
You understand the economics of that, right? Mm-hmm. So they get people to spend $10 a month. So you're spending $120 a year to get HBO Max. And what you get is, in your mind, you get all of this catalog, but you also, in your mind, get first look at movies without having to go to a theater. So instead of spending $10 at a theater where the studio only gets a portion of that, you can actually create your own content, put it out on your own channel, and capture all of the revenue. It's a total money grab. It's totally brilliant, and it's never going to change. So all COVID did is it made the slope of this change, the angle changed, in that it's all happened faster than I suspected it would. But this is where the industry was going anyway.
So we talked about HBO Max's strategy. We talked about Disney Plus's strategy, which seems to be the market leader right now in how to do this. Paramount Plus has an interesting strategy. Very quickly after a film has been released in theaters, they wait about a month and then it gets released on Paramount Plus, which is why A Quiet Place, most people listening to this right now probably don't know that the sequel to A Quiet Place is available if you subscribe to Paramount Plus. What do you think of that strategy?
Well, there's also movies on Paramount Plus, the new Mark Wahlberg movie that I watched and reviewed on Nothing Personal that I cannot remember for the life of me what it was called, but it was totally insane.
It should just be called the new Mark Wahlberg movie because it's all that matters when it comes.
I think it's called Say Hi to Your Mother for me.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if that were the title to movies?
Yeah, I mean, it should
be. It was just the new Keanu Reeves movie. Whoa. I don't even know the name.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, there's a new Nicolas Cage movie that is getting legitimate praise.
He dropped out of Tiger King. Amazon and he dropped out of Tiger King because it was a movie of the moment and he doesn't want to do it anymore.
There was an interesting GQ article written on
it. You're going to do Truffle Pig, though, right?
It's called Pig, yeah, where he plays like a Portland area chef that has decided to move back to the simple life, and he's a truffle farmer, and someone takes his beloved pig. It kind of feels like Mandy, like, oh, this is eccentric, and I loved Mandy because that was maximum Cage, but this is a little understated for Nicolas Cage and only a couple of two build-ups to crescendo, and he is getting some legitimate Oscar buzz around this performance.
No.
Oh, yes.
Well, why are you saying no?
I did hear a rumor, though. I heard a rumor, and I don't know whether it's true, but maybe you guys do, that Nicolas Cage has announced that he is purchasing every single pig in the United States.
What?
That's what I heard.
No, what?
That has to be fake news.
It's not only fake news. I don't know why he would do that. Yeah, it's a terrible joke.
Yeah, it's a dead
fish.
Hold on.
Now I have to explain the joke.
Yes.
Nicolas Cage is famous that when he gets involved in projects, he buys all these crazy things with his money, whether it's castles or cars,
the T-Rex
or
skull,
ancient artifacts, T-Rex bones, and he goes broke, which is why you can't name a movie the Nicolas Cage movie, because there's so many movies that you have to be more specific. But I guess if I had to explain it, it's not funny.
It's not. One last thing on Black Widow. I came away with it really surprised that I enjoyed it so much because I wasn't really into that character. There really wasn't much to the character. Scarlett Johansson had a quote to the effect of, I was basically in the Avengers movies as eye candy, to which I said, Scarlett, have you seen Chris Hemsworth? Have you seen Captain America's ass? No. There was eye candy in that movie, but you were a tertiary part of that for me. She had this solo movie kind of stolen from her. I felt, because the ensemble cast was so strong, and obviously because of what happened to the Black Widow character, being that this movie is set in the past and there really isn't a future for her character. If you've seen Endgame, it kind of seems like the spinoff characters are going to go off on their own story arc. So I kind of felt like Black Widow's movie was stolen out from under her.
Samson,
so you're saying that Black Widow can't get reborn? Like, that's it?
Samson's such a sucker for Scarlett Johansson that he's not going to let anyone take her movie like that. No. I don't even know if he has interest in this genre. He's just got interest. This should have been called for him the latest Scarlett Johansson movie.
I admit it. And by the way, I admit it proudly. I love her. And I hate Colin. What's his name? Jost or
Yost? They're expecting.
No, are they really?
Yeah. Congratulations to the happy couple. 39-year-old Colin.
So you're
Colin
saying
Jost,
I got a shot.
She is expecting, I believe. I saw someone call them America's royal family. I'm like, what are we doing?
did you see Prince William, the son of Princess Diana? Who's the guy who's going to be king after Charles? Is it William?
Yeah.
Did you see him at the end of the Italy-Italian final?
I saw a funny meme that was the royal family holding their small child, and it said, like, this is what it looked like when Bruce Wayne's parents left the theater.
He looked happy. I mean, it's as though he had a family member pass away, and he's got frame of reference, sadly, for that. I love sports, and I love the feeling and the emotion, and that's what drives the revenue and drives the asset valuations. But I was looking at that, and I was thinking, man, you got a lot of problems, and not one of them is the fact that England just lost on PKs.
Yeah. Florence Pugh is in Black Widow. She's great. She's in Midsommar, which is made by the same filmmaker that did Hereditary, which is just a total mind bleep of a movie.
Are you pronouncing that correctly? And I just get the name wrong every time, but it's one of the most horrific horror movies you will ever see. It's something that deserves an X rating for just being horrific.
There's no more X's, Dan. It's NC-17.
All right, well, make it older than that. Make it like NC-35.
So it's spelled, I'll bring in Sugats for help here. It's about a Swedish forest, right? It's called Midsommar, S-O-M-M-A-R, which I think is just Swedish for summer. So Midsommar.
There is zero chance I will see that movie.
Mike, you nailed it.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, Stu.
Hello, David.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Thank you.
Can you get in the Zoom, please?
Sure.
I believe Florence Pugh is dating Zach Braff in an odd Hollywood couple scenario.
He was dating someone else before there was another odd couple. I think he was dating a younger woman, and he got a lot of negative attention for it. And I am blanking as to who his last... You're talking about the guy who starred in Garden State, right?
Yes, in Scrubs.
Yes. Yeah. He had another relationship that was looked at as scandalous.
Yeah. I've got other takes on Marvel adjacent projects. Loki, I feel like I'm the only person in the world that didn't like it, but I don't think you've watched it. So let's move on to baseball, because this is supposed to be the one week on the sports calendar that baseball has to itself. It's actually up against the NBA Finals, which finally became interesting last night. I'll talk about that with Dan and Stu later on in the show. But my main takeaway from All-Star Week, outside of the pitching coach that ruined the home run derby for me, even though Ohtani found a way to make that even dramatic, was the old school BP uniforms that were associated with a home run derby are now the main uniforms for the All-Star game, and I hate it. I love tuning into the All-Star game as a little kid and seeing all the different uniforms and the team photos where your team was represented. Now, in an awful capitalistic push to sell more merchandise, we've made every All-Star look the same, and I'm not having it, David Samson.
So here's how that works. When Under Armour actually cut a deal to become the on-field uniform sponsor for Major League Baseball. And it was a huge deal at the time, because Nike used to have the deal. And as part of that, all the executives got free Nike gift cards. And we had tons of money that we could get Nike stuff. And Nike basically supplied everything in the clubhouse, batting practice stuff and shorts and shirts and everything else, sweatshirts. And Under Armour came in and they swooped up the deal because they offered MLB way more money. So MLB said, see you later, Nike. Under Armour starts, and they could not even do a season. They changed courses. Their stock went into the crapper. They had such financial issues that they walked away from the deal without performing for a minute. Nike came back. And as part of the deal for Nike to come back, when MLB was desperate for an on-field uniform sponsor, The deal was they can do as many uniforms as they want. They get the swoosh on the uniform. And Nike said, we have an idea. We're going to do for the All-Star game, brand new uniforms, because people are then going to buy them. It's like an alternate jersey. And MLB had no say. They had no choice but to agree to that. And if you looked around at Coors Field, there were plenty of people wearing them. I found them to be awful. I didn't like the blue color. Someone said on Twitter that it looked like a softball team, and it really did. Shohei Ohtani is just he's a big guy, by the way. But he looked like, as he was taking the mound, some sort of guy that I thought he was going to pitch underhand.
Tell us about the business of merch, things that we don't know, what a big business it is, how much baseball is able to profit off of this stuff.
Well, I want to tell you something that makes George Steinbrenner roll in his grave, and he always hated this, and he would always complain about this to me, that when the whole MLB.com, the MLB website that started in 2000, it was approved. My first ever owners meeting is when MLBAM started. And the concept of MLBAM was in order to increase revenue sharing, because everyone wears Yankee stuff and no one wears Marlins stuff. And what MLBAM did, now known as MLB.com, if you buy something online, like a uniform or a hat, all 30 teams share equally in that revenue. So every Yankee hat that is bought online, the Marlins get 3.3 cents of that hat. But if you buy a Yankee hat at a Yankee game, then the Yankees get 100 cents of that hat and the other teams get zero. And it always stuck in the craw of teams who had great merch sales versus teams that didn't, loved it. Teams that did, hated it, but it has kept going and it will not stop. And if George only were alive today to know, because he never thought that the web and MLB.com would become what it has become, no one buys really at team stores anymore. Everything is online and everything gets shared.
One of the things I found fascinating and didn't even understand, David, because you are an outcast in that sport. You were too different. You were too transparent. You were too much yourself. And what I found fascinating is that sport, so reluctant to change, so historic, that Mark Cuban's not welcome here. We can't have that in ownership. This is a very staid, conservative money club, that they were ahead of everybody in sports on the advanced media stuff. I don't know how that happened. How could that sport, a relic from the past, be ahead of everybody on all the stuff that was going to be coming in evolution from the year 2000?
Two reasons. First of all, the funny part about the first ever board of MLBAM, what happened when it was created, is there was a board for MLBAM that was consisted of owners of teams. And the only criteria to be on the board of MLB.com is you had to be an FOB, which is a friend of Bud. You had to be old and you had to be white and you had to not know anything about the internet. All of those things were a prerequisite for being on the board of MLBAM. However, the best thing they did is hire someone named Bob Bowman, who ended up leaving baseball. He got into a power struggle with the wrong person and lost. Bob Bowman, who is a longtime executive, successful executive, he basically convinced the old white guys to let him do it. And then we'd get reports at owners' meetings about what was going on with the company as it was building, and they'd get up on stage at the owners' meeting and talk about all these different metrics, and every owner would have glass eye because they would have no idea what was going on until the end of every presentation. And Bob Bowman and the other heads of MLBAM would always end the presentation with the following: and this year, your distribution will be $11.2 million. Boom! I love it. This is great. Bring on more old white guys.
David, one of the things, perhaps the thing I love most about the All-Star game, is the players being mic'd up and being mic'd up for like an inning. Like, that gets me to tune in. Freddie Freeman was great. Tatis Jr. was fantastic. I'm wondering, would the players ever agree to do that during the regular season? Has it ever been discussed?
We discuss it all the time. The fight that we had with the players in order to get them to do interviews, there's a change that was made that starting pitchers have to be available to give interviews after they're taken out of the game to the local broadcast networks. That was a fight beyond belief because they don't want to be bothered. could you please microphone yourself during BP? No, I don't want to get caught saying something. I don't want to do it. And what happened was, for the jewel events like the All-Star game, when it was not an exhibition, the players said absolutely not. Do you remember when there was a this time it counts after the Bud Selig tie game in Milwaukee in 2000 and whatever year that was? I want to say 2002, whatever year. And they ran out of pitchers. And after that, Bud said, I've got a great idea. We're going to make the home field advantage go to the team that wins the All-Star game. Players were not happy
in the World Series.
In the World Series, right. You get home field advantage in the World Series. That's a big deal, to give home field advantage to the league that wins the All-Star game. And I happen to have loved that. And now it's not that way. But when it's just an exhibition, the players are a little looser. The money's not big enough. They each only make like 25 grand for winning. So back in the day, that mattered much more. But these days, it's not a big deal. Like when Pete Alonso wants the $1 million to win the home run derby. And don't kid yourself, that's a main factor of him wanting to win the derby, in addition to what it does for the ego, because that's a huge amount of money when you're making the minimum. But for the majority of the All-Stars, the 25 grand for winning or losing, it doesn't really matter. So they're much looser. Therefore, they're willing to do the microphone stuff. But what has been discussed is, in this era of cancel culture, there is huge concern about the live nature of it. So what you did see was a constant reminder by Joe Buck and John Smoltz, hey, that's a live mic. Hey, you may want to tell everyone you're around it's a live mic. They were continually doing that because they did not want a Tom Brenneman situation.
Such a great moment, though, to be watching Tatis as Guerrero hits that home run. And his, I mean, it was just such a nice moment that Tatis, you look on his face and he's like, holy shit, that ball has been hit forever.
It was great. But David's right. There was a point where Freeman had to tell Aaron Judge, hey, this is a live mic. Be careful about what it is you're saying right now.
I love Freddie Freeman being more journalistically responsible than Shannon Sharp.
And then Joe Buck says, we will not hear another word from Aaron Judge.
I grew up idolizing Ken Griffey Jr. He was my favorite player. He was cool. And when, in retrospect, he didn't really say much. The narrative was kind of built around him, and he became a superstar because he was dressing kind of cool and kids gravitated towards it.
Allen wasn't Iverson, even dressing cool, right? It was just the cap was
just
backwards.
A backwards hat. And he later said it was because it was a big, it was a tiny hat or something like that. And Allen Iverson had this too, even though he was a much better quote than Ken Griffey Jr. And Fernando Tatis, I get glimpses of that same sort of draw to a younger generation. To me, he's got that superstar quality that jumps off of a young kid, the passion for the
charisma.
Game.
Charisma. He's got enormous youth, exuberance, effervescence. And this one can't be overstated, the importance and the value of it. He looks joyous about what he's doing.
Yes.
He wants to be there. He loves being there. It jumps off the screen. And I think in terms of connecting with the youth, he's as good a shot as they've got, at least in certain demographics here in America, because I think Ohtani can also have that kind of gravitational pull.
You saw that he was the first all-star position player for San Diego since Tony Gwynn. Like, they are starved.
What?
He's got face, and he's got the face paint. And what Mike is saying,
you
there.
Mean starter? I got to believe Caminiti made it to an all-star game.
That's the stat. That's the graphic I saw. If you can correct me, feel free, because I looked at it, I'm like, can that be right? But he has got the charisma that can make you forget about the contract, David. And that is no small thing, because these guys become their contracts. The guys with the big contracts, you're like, oh, he's just about money. In fact, that's something Stanton didn't have for you guys. Stanton was too much of a statue and too much of a robot. He didn't have a youthful charisma that was like, wow, he really enjoys the game.
Well, you'd be shocked, actually, how many players don't actually enjoy the game. It's sort of like saying that everyone in your shipping container loves being on TV and radio, right? There's some people, it's just a job. And that's okay. That's normal. There are some players who just play baseball because that's what they're good at. Like, some lawyers are just good at being lawyers. They don't love it, but that's what they're good at. And the thing about Stanton, he was the first $300 million player. He felt the weight of that contract. He was not happy in Miami. He wanted to go elsewhere. And Tatis, I think he could be what you are describing, but you're also talking about a guy who's having a great year, a guy who is sort of injured and is still playing through that injury, and his team is successful. The question is, can he be that guy on an unsuccessful team? and not playing well consistently. What happens if he's injured and out for a year? Then he just disappears. So that's why it's so hard to find a face of baseball, because it's such a tenuous thing. Because like with Acuna, one play could happen and you're out for the year and then no one's talking about you anymore.
Position player that started in the All-Star game, because they had a couple position players San Diego had post Tony Gwynn, who was making All-Star games up until 1999. But
get out of here.
Yeah, Klesko, Rondell White, Adrian Gonzalez, and Justin Upton as well. So now they've got a handful of position players, but not necessarily starters in the All-Star game.
In retrospect, David, did the Padres think, and I know you say no sure things, but did the Padres think to themselves that when they gave Machado that money, and all of us were like, why do the Padres think they're a piece away? Is it because they felt that Tatis was this?
No. No, when they traded for Tatis, they did not know what he was at all, and neither did the White Sox, or else that trade never would have happened. They did Machado because they've got a stepchild scenario going the way the Mets do with the Yankees. They have that with the Dodgers. They're so jealous of the Dodgers and what they have from a revenue standpoint, what they have from a fan base standpoint, what they have from an on-field success standpoint, that those owners, Ron Fowler and the new control partners, a guy named Pete Seidler, I think is his last name. And they just want to be the Dodgers. And you've seen what the Padres have done. They do a lot like what the Marlins did, what we did. They load up, it doesn't work, and then they break down, and then they load up again. And we did a lot of that, so there's not been a lot of consistency. And don't forget, it was only a year ago that we were talking about Will Myers and Eric Hosmer. What a waste of money. Can we trade them? They're totally overpaid. Machado getting $30 million too much. Getting Blake Snell, they're going to be great. Meanwhile, he stinks. And meanwhile, the Padres are in third place. So I wouldn't coronate the Padres as America's team quite yet.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes, so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Stugatz, did you see that the Angels did a version of the thing that you've been advocating football teams to do across years? The Angels used... And you've been telling people for years now that a team should just take all quarterbacks.
Yes.
The Angels, who have Trout and Ohtani, are like, bleep it. We're in every round, we're taking 20 pitchers, and not just 20 pitchers, 19 college pitchers. One of you mother get up here and help out Ohtani and Trout.
I mean, you do it that way, you're bound to get a rotation, right? Like three or four of those 19 have to be decent. No,
that's, the odds are not that good, but they did increase their odds of getting a good pitcher, David.
So they're getting a lot of attention for that. But the Dodgers drafted, I think, 18 of 20 pitchers. Last year, the Marlins did 5 out of 5. This year, the Marlins may have done 16 of 20. This is not new. You do not draft thinking that that is going to help your major league team right now unless you're an owner. That's how owners think. Don't take a high school guy. It takes too long. I'm not even buying anything other than green bananas. I'm not going to sit around 5 years, pay a guy $8 million, and then hope that he may make it 5 years from now. I want to pay a guy and have him help me right now. There was a player who we tried to draft years ago named Craig Breslow. We ended up getting him later, and he wanted more money. He wanted what was called back then a major league contract, which means out of the draft, he has to be added to your roster immediately. And that's way too expensive for a team, not financially, but in terms of roster squeezing to put a player on your roster who has no experience, even if he's a college player. But owners love college players. And so when you see these teams drafting more and more college players, it's really owners having a bigger impact, saying we cannot wait to be disappointed, let's be disappointed right now. But Stu, you think that four of those 20 are going to be in the major leagues helping Ohtani and Trout? I would take the under every day of the week.
All right, but if you keep taking pitchers, eventually you'll get a staff. That's all I'm saying. Mike mentioned Ken Caminiti, and that forced me to look up his stats because that's what I do when anyone mentions an athlete around here. How come no one ever points out the Brady Anderson year that he had? Caminiti had he had an MVP season.
Everyone knows he was a steroid user. He died young.
He had 1 year of 40 homers. It was the MVP year. He had 1 year of north of 120 RBIs.
Nobody mentioned it. It's what I associate Caminiti with.
He had three All-Star seasons, but he was a brilliant player. There's 1 year that sticks out because not many people remember Ken Caminiti, who looks like your best friend's scary dad, won an NL MVP. He is a fascinating player, one of the greatest plays I've ever seen a third baseman make, and he made it against Marlins. I remember being a little kid watching that.
He was amazing defensively.
he was an incredible player. Your favorite Ken Caminiti
story? Way better than Brady Anderson, guys. Way better, but equally a steroid user.
Tragic, yeah. Heart disease, steroids makes everything bigger, and if you might have a little illness, it might make it a more serious illness. It's why people preach the horrors of steroids, but he also had a lot of demons. He had alcoholism.
The mistake he made is he kept doing steroids, right? He didn't go the D. Gordon route, which is just do them till you get the contract and then stop, or the Brady Anderson route, just do them, hit 50 homers, get the contract, and then stop. He did the, hey, I'm going to go and keep going. He did the sort of the Barry Bonds way, right? I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it again and again and again.
He was all in. You're right on steroids.
Can we please just spend about 5 minutes here sinking into the wonderful space where cartoon Ken Caminiti exists? First of all, he's got the cartoon comedy name. Yeah. It's a great name. Yeah. His forearms were baseball bats. They were actual baseball bats. He should have played with an axe thrown over his shoulder.
His name sounded like, and he looked like, You remember Ken Griffey Jr.'s Slugfest, where they didn't have the license for any Major League Baseball players outside of Ken Griffey Jr., so they just made a bunch of players. I think Butch Husky was also in this. Like, is that a video game name? Or is that a real person? Ken Caminiti looked like that and reminds me of the glorious time in the mid-90s where the goatee had its day in the sun.
I think we need to pause the show just for a few moments while 99% of your audience Googles Ken Caminiti.
Yeah, well, we need to sink into this hole here because he just mentioned Butch and Husky, and these are sort of both things.
Butch Husky.
Yeah, I think Butch and Husky is a 70s cop show.
Really? Butch and Husky.
The reason I'm saying Butch and Husky is because when I look at Ken Caminiti, you mentioned Butch Husky, another player. I don't want to change Caminiti's name because it's a wonderful cartoon name, but if I told you Ken Caminiti his name was the adjectives Butch and Husky.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. Yes.
And I think Homer Bush also qualifies in this. Is that a real baseball player or someone from Ken Griffey Jr.'s Slugfest?
Homer Bush is the opposite of Ken Caminiti in every possible way.
Yeah. It wasn't great. Is Cameron Maben still in the league?
He is.
He is. Yeah.
He is.
Yeah.
He's a mess. Designated.
It's funny.
He was, but he got designated. I don't think he's active anymore. But he actually, if you see him without a shirt, he's got a Juan Pierre body. Juan Pierre liked to wear baggy uniforms, so people thought he was scrawny. You go in the clubhouse and see him naked, let me tell you something. He's got a 10 body. And Cameron Maben was like that as well. Very, very, very well built.
David, how does it make you feel that if you just held out to the pieces that you got back in the Miguel Cabrera trade for 15 years, it actually wouldn't have been that bad of a trade with Maben and Miller.
It's enough. It's 25 episodes you brought it up. When is it enough? It's funny. It's not even good content. It's not even good content anymore.
I thought this was a pro David Samson take, actually, that the trade with the benefit of 20 years wasn't that terrible.
He was taking a counterintuitive argument that these guys weren't as bad later as they were when you traded for
them. Fair. I mean, take it, David.
It took them 10 and 15 years.
But let's not understate. They were terrible for David. I I think Brooke Badenhop was your best.
He
piece.
Was
the Hopper.
The Hopper was.
He
the,
was awesome.
He was a straight long reliever
he's
too.
He's a top five strange guy.
Oh my
top
god!
Five.
Well, let's do it. We gotta do it now.
Please.
All right, hold
yes.
on. We got a couple and of Dan, top five lists.
Last
here.
Week we teased him giving us a top five list on his top five movie villains too. So we got two top fives now.
Well, I think we have three because I want Clubhouse Bodies.
Yes, so yes. do I. Please keep those diverse. Top five. I'm giving you a warning on the front end because I don't want you just ogling Pierre's and Preston Wilson's, okay? Please
hold
keep
on.
It diverse.
I thought you meant I have to do only players.
No, you can do coaches as well. If
yes.
you've got
please
anybody,
throw a manager
if
you, in there.
If you've got Andre Dawson, I'm sure Tony Perez looks great naked in the shower. Let's do this. Top
Jack
five.
McKean.
Top five strange guys.
That's not even what I was talking.
Which one are we doing?
I've seen all of these guys
well,
naked.
Renee
right?
Latchman. Renee Latchman.
Every one Latch. Of them.
Renee Latchman would have gotten the body fat under 8% if he didn't drink three Clubhouse beers on his desk during the press conference right after the game. Let's go ahead and do it. Top five strangest Marlins. Number five.
This is... People, do people know this is not rehearsed?
But you're
trying to... over 18 years and come up with this? All right. I'm going to have to say Joe Borowski. He was a closer for us 1 year, and he basically walked around the clubhouse naked, and he would be head to toe in powder. He would cover himself in baby powder and walk around the clubhouse because he didn't like towels.
Jobo, is this the top five body list? Which one
no,
are we doing
No, this is
here?
Not the top okay. five. It's strangest Marlins top okay. five. Okay. That sounds wonderful, incidentally. I love a spa because you could just sort of go through things that don't belong to you that you don't have to. You're renting everything in a spa. If I were in a major league clubhouse, I too would just love to put talcum powder all over me and just walk through and have others clean it up. Number four.
Was that supposed to be some sort of way to get me time to think?
Yes.
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 It
because it's
work.
Unfair. What we do to you here is unfair, where we're just throwing in your face, give us the five strangest guys, and we give you no prep for it.
But all I'm thinking about is you naked with talcum powder everywhere.
That's right. It's a filibuster. Let's go. Number four. Full. I'm full. My body is full.
Got it.
Number four.
Are we doing bodies? Can we do body? We're doing strange.
We're all doing right. strange, yes.
So there was a player. Burke Badenhop. Let's do number four, and I'll get to the top three. What was strange about him is that he was a very intellectual guy, but he was also sort of a loner. And so we'd sit in the clubhouse, and we'd sit in the lunchroom, in the food room, and you'd eat with him. And oftentimes players sit. It's very strange. There's five tables in the lunchroom. If five guys are eating, they each take their own table. And when Burke was in there, Burke would never want to eat alone. But then when he'd be with you at the table, he wouldn't say anything. So it's like he wanted to be social, but was socially awkward. And it was strange when you go into a food room in a major league clubhouse, you have to ask permission if someone's already at a table. That's sort of the unwritten rules in a clubhouse. You say, hey, can I join you? If you're a player joining a player, an executive joining a player, hey, can I join you? And Burke never did that. He just wanted to be around people, but didn't really talk a lot to people.
The Hopper.
Number three.
I'm going to have to go with Cliff Floyd. And I'm sorry to do this, Cliffy, but here's why. What was strange about Cliff Floyd, a great family man, great guy in all sorts of ways, is that he had this version of himself and of events and of Miami that was not based in reality. And that was one of the problems that we had, where he had sort of a big divide between his worth and his pay and his performance. And what made it strange is that we would talk to him honestly, and he would not listen or hear it, and he would get upset about it. To this day, we get along great, and it's totally water under the milk. I think I just mixed the metaphors.
You did.
Spilled milk or water under the bridge. Yeah. But that I always found strange because that was my first experience really with player delusion.
He thought he was a Miami superstar, that he deserved to be treated like glamour,
exactly.
Height of sports. I'm Miami chic and treat me as a superstar. Is that what you're talking about?
And I just thought he was just overpaid.
Number two
was a pitcher for Montreal named Scott Strickland, who actually pitched for the Mets. And I really, really, he pitched for the Mets and Expos. And I think we got him at the Marlins for a little tiny bit of time. He was fascinated by playing in Montreal. He loved sort of what the world was like in Montreal. He didn't speak a word of French. And what was strange about him is that he was far more focused on his off the field life than his on the field life. And what I would talk to him about is, hey, this off the field slam that you're doing is awesome. But if you don't perform on the field, you become just another 5'8" ordinary guy who's going to not have a shot. And he never believed that that day would come. And I have to believe that that day came.
And finally,
he played three games for you, David.
Number
is that what it was?
That explains
a cup of coffee. Yeah.
That explains. Is that even a cup of coffee? Is that that feels an like espresso? Something very small.
I don't know. How you,
what year did we bring him back for those three games?
It looks like 2010.
Dude, how do you remember somebody that played three games? I've had interns that stayed for a year with me.
He wasn't sure, though. If you remember, I was thinking when he said it, he's like, I think he played for the Marlins. I'm not sure. And that's exactly what he deserved for his three-game stint as
so
a Marlin.
So we were hopeful that he could – that we needed help in the bullpen. I recall this well, and we knew him from our days in Montreal from years and years earlier. Obviously he was the tail end of his career. And what happened was we had a roster squeeze. That often happens where you just sign a guy and you know that you're going to designate him right off the roster immediately once somebody's ready to come back or once he gives up something. So we tried Strickland. I didn't realize it was only three games though.
I love that Mike Piazza passes for longevity as a Marlin in nine games.
He does not.
And number
Stop
one.
That.
Number
the
one.
Marlins have no, you know what? No, not number one. Hold on. Your narrative that's been going on for 20 years that the Marlins are the farm system for every other team. You know, were you watching the All-Star game?
How long was Piazza Marlin? What are you objecting to?
I'm objecting to you saying that all the Marlins do is trade everybody.
I said that Mike Piazza was a Marlin for how many games?
Nine.
Okay, that's all I was just a joke. Strickland was three games. This guy was
very
nine.
Personal.
I don't know why it is you're getting upset about this.
I'm not taking it personally. What I am saying is that what you do with your roar is that you make people upset. And if you watch the All-Star game, how many players have played for more than one organization?
Yeah,
how many in your mind?
That day is
dead. Every one of them.
That day is dead, David. They're all mercenaries. They're all free agents. And
okay.
You
and so stop. It's enough.
Again, though, Mike Piazza played for you nine games.
He was never going to be a Marlin. That trade, and I didn't do that trade, might I add, before people start adding me. Where can they at me, Mikey?
At David P. Sampson on Twitter. If you can't listen to his podcast, Nothing Personal with David Sampson, make sure to follow at David P. Sampson because he does a great job repurposing a lot of the video clips. And while you didn't trade for Mike Piazza, that's a fair
Wait,
shot.
You missed a line. We're being nominated for People's Choice Podcast Award, Nothing Personal, Best Male Host. And you can either vote for Lebatard and Friends or vote for me. So in the drop-down menu, look for either Lebatard or Samson in the Best Male Podcast Host and vote for whoever you want.
We're nominated? I didn't know that.
Wow, congratulations.
No,
to
you're
us.
Not nominated.
Oh, that's too bad.
Are you really nominated?
Yes.
By the people?
If you go, it's a people's choice. If you have to go on, I'm in the final round prior to the nominations. I was nominated last year and lost to ESPN, who sponsored the People's Choice podcast.
Oh, wow.
And they ended up
it's a heady play. Shocking.
Can we get number one?
No, we're waiting for number one, but he wanted to make some other Piazza line.
The line was, but you did decide to bring him back for the final game at Pro Players Stadium as one of your luminaries.
That's a heady play.
First of all, why wouldn't you do that?
Exactly.
Because he played nine games for you. Oh,
you're a legend. As though that was a bad move by bringing Piazza back to the last game at Pro Player. People love to see him.
Number one, the strangest Marlin, or I guess it's not a Marlin because you just took an Expo, the strangest player David Sampson has ever been around.
Al Leiter. Clear number one, not even close. It's actually not even close. When we signed him, you know, his son just got drafted. Congratulations, Jack Leiter out of Vanderbilt as the number two pick in the draft. And it was fun to see Al on TV put a Texas Rangers uniform on his son. And we brought in Al because he was a longtime Marlin, a fan favorite. And he had more mental issues, and not mental health. It's not about anxiety or depression or concern. He had things that he needed to do before he pitched, things he would do while he pitched. He had certain tics, and I don't mean that in the people who actually have tics. I mean in the way of just foibles. That's what's, I can't think of the
word. I think you've appropriately covered all your bases.
You're going with like routines, idiosyncrasies.
Idiosyncrasies. Thank you, Dan. He had idiosyncrasies that, to me, if you're going to have those, they better result in results. And all they resulted in was losses and lack of performance and no leadership with our pitching staff in 05 that we thought we'd get. But that doesn't make them strange. But the idiosyncrasies that he had were the most of any player. And there's a lot of superstitions in baseball. His superstitions and idiosyncrasies were the number one of any player over 18 years.
It's a strong list, especially when you lead off with a guy whose idiosyncrasies was to walk around the clubhouse naked, covered in baby powder. David, we always enjoy. We got two top five lists still left in our back pocket. We're going to have to kick that can down the road for next week. So your top five villains and bodies in baseball next week, David. Make sure to follow him once again at David P. Sampson on Twitter. Always a delight to have you on here, sir.
Thank you, guys. Good luck.
Thanks, David.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.